sahanavavatu, sahanavapunaktu, sahavivyankaravavahai, tejasvinavadhitamastu mavidvishavahai. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti.
Okay, set on.
Usually when you ask what's the purpose in life, it's a more involved question.
It's a more involved answer anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You never quite look at it like how you presented it.
Nope. Because you have to have a self to talk about it like that, you know. But I found that really kind of a valuable understanding that we think of words like meaning and purpose as though there's something we achieve.
Do.
That then you have a feeling of being meaningful, but actually you can do all kinds of things, but you feel totally meaningless and purpose. You feel there's no purpose, you know? Because the feeling of meaningfulness and purpose is really just the ananda of the self. That's what gives a sense of meaning. You know, so you need a certain shantavritti to have that meaning of something being meaningful or purposeful. You know, and that's only your being. So you don't get that. It's not an accomplishment out here that's going to give you that sense. It's really the ananda swarupa that gives that sense. And then when you start realizing, thinking about it, yourself has no history or future. There's no history or future at all. So then, from the standpoint of your being, there's nothing to accomplish. Yeah. There's nothing to achieve, there's nothing to accomplish. You already are the whole. There's nothing more, you know? And that to be the whole, really we're talking in Satyam Mithya, the whole in terms of the Ishwar, sort of Ishwar's projection, the whole Maya, Upadhi, that is nothing but Brahman. There is no something there, just like with the clay pot, there's no pot. There's really only clay. The pot is useful, and we talk about it, this creation is useful, it has so much going on. You know, there's so many laws, so much order and all of that. But in terms of what is essentially here, you know, is only the self, is only conscious being. And that is infinite wholeness, because there's nothing apart from it. It is the self of absolutely everything. So even of any verbal action has no being apart from the self. So these very important emotions, we don't necessarily think of them as emotions like feeling purposeful or meaning. It's important to feel, you know, like that your life is meaningful or that you have some purpose. You know, but what if the purpose, your purposefulness is only attached to mithya, something that is mithya? That's not going to cut it. Because there's nothing there. That means that in order to feel the purposefulness, what you're doing has to give you a shantavritti. You know, like for instance, dharma, if you're doing dharma, you'll feel your life is purposeful and meaningful because it gives you a shantavritti. If you have compassion, you practice kindness to all beings and this type of thing, you feel very purposeful because it gives the shantavritti so that the ananda of your own swarupa is not blocked from your mind. The agitation isn't there in the mind. So
you were saying that that there is, in truth, we have no self, past or future, right? Or nothing to be accomplished.
Well, it has to belong to mithya. Any type of accomplishment, you can have relative accomplishments, you know. But that doesn't make you feel purposeful. Like, if I build a house, I've accomplished building the house. That's an accomplishment. If you work for a new job, you get the new job. That's an accomplishment. But you can be, feel your whole life is you just got this wonderful job, according to other people. But for you, it can be totally empty and totally meaningful, meaningless. It really depends on who you are. Who you are when you're given that job, or when you complete building your house, or whatever it is. That's not necessarily going to be purposeful. There's no cause-effect relationship to purposefulness, unless you start looking at Dharma or Shantavrittis.
So there is purpose in the sense that gaining knowledge and participating with Dharma, would you call that purpose?
I would say it gives the experience of what you call something that is meaningful and purposeful.
But self-knowledge is for the mind of the jiva.
Right. And so what does self-knowledge do for you?
It gives your mind
an absolute shanti.
Yeah, right.
And actually, what it does is it knowledge gives you shanti, which is independent of the mind. The shanti that is the self of the mind. And as the mind starts to recognize the freedom of that, that no matter what it does or what happens in the universe, nothing can take it away from that shanti, and that shanti, nothing can take that shanti away from itself, because it's non-dual, it's non-objectifiable. You know? And so the relativity of words like meaningfulness and purposefulness, we still talk that way. It's mit, but it's mitya. Things not understood. It's not that we don't want to say, oh, life has no purpose. It's not that at all. It's just, what is the source of that sense of meaningfulness and purposefulness? What is the source of that experience? Because you can complete any number of actions and have any number of accomplishments and feel totally dark and empty. You know, we've all had experiences like that where you have an accomplishment and you don't feel any joy.
There's no boost.
No boost. And sometimes there's a great boost from just the littlest thing, you know. So what's the source of this sense of tremendous well-being or meaningfulness, you know?
But it does seem as if we work for antakarana shuddhi, you know, in order to gain knowledge, and then we work, and maybe even after that we work for the fruits of knowledge, work on the pratibandhaka. So it does seem like there is,
on that level of mitya, there's purpose. That's why we're doing it.
Yeah.
But I'm saying this: there's a little shift that has to happen in your head, and it's that we're doing all of this because of being a mumukshu and realizing that this isn't going to work in terms of giving us any type of lasting happiness or fullness. We've seen through it.
Mm-hmm.
And so now we have to really find out, well, what is that happiness? What is there that ananda? Is there anything about me that is free from this time and change? So we're searching, you know, we're trying to gain, and then we come to this teaching, and then we're trying to gain self-knowledge to understand, and then we're trying to get the antakarana shuddhi, all of these type of things, so that we can know what Swamiji means when he says, when he says, I am the purposefulness. What does he mean? Or the only purpose in life is to live it. It means there's no real purpose, just to be with it, which is the state of a jivan mukta. I'm simply with my life. I am simply living my life. That is it. And that's why he says, I just do, you know, I do what's before me to be done to the best of my ability. And that's all. You know how he says that kind of stuff? And that's all.
So again, what is the shift? And the shift is just recognizing your own being, or the beingness of well-being. What shift?
Well, what I'm trying to do now is, in your own experience, because you know yourself, like when I'm doing the meditation, I'm just saying, sit with yourself, be yourself, turn the mind to your own being, invoke the inner friend and all that. So just to then recognize your own nature as being free from time, no history, no future. You simply are. And so from your own standpoint, there is no purpose in the sense that there's no change. This is it. This is it. This is timeless me. And then where is the purpose in terms of what's going on in Mithya? Then I made another point. This is, to me, a very important point. When you say that, when you're just talking as just as a person, when you say that this is really meaningful, or this is really important, or this is purposeful, I feel like my life has a purpose. When you say this, you know, my life has meaning. You are actually talking about a state of experience. That this sense of purpose is not just some things out here that are taking place nicely. There's a sense of well-being, a sense of purposefulness, a sense of meaningfulness. You know, it's an affect. So I'm saying that that affect is your own swarupa. That is another word for ananda, meaningfulness, purposefulness, love, well-being.
So you're saying you can 100% be there without these outside actions, yeah, which is the whole point of this.
Absolutely.
Whole thing.
But that's the very nature of the self.
So again,
as long as we're relying on the outside actions, we're completely vulnerable to
completely.
That's
samsara, totally.
Right.
Yeah. So again, if one is seeking a purpose in life, one is projecting one's ananda into the creation.
Well, we're all seeking a purpose in life because we're all seeking ananda, or wholeness.
Yeah.
Give me something to make life seem purposeful or meaningful, which means let me feel whole and complete.
Right.
That's what we're asking for,
right,
that my life has some meaning, that I feel whole and complete, like I've accomplished something that is meaningful, and that others look upon as meaningful too. Others should see my life as purposeful too, so that I can have that feeling of purposefulness and of meaningfulness. And it's a feeling, you know. You're not going to be depressed and say, my life is so meaningful, you know. What you say is, I've done all these things, I've accomplished all these things, and it feels absolutely meaningless to me.
But I think that's a nice thing about Vedanta. I mean, it's such a great thing that, like, for someone like me, you know, maybe my family would look at my life and say, oh, what a loser, you know? But I don't feel that way.
You won't feel that way.
Because yeah, all the measurements that society... In fact, that sort of made me a seeker. I took a hiatus from seeking, and then I did all these things that were supposed to make me happy. And then one day I realized I wasn't happy at all. I'd done them, you know, and I thought, oh, I better go back to spiritual.
That sounds like that Jim Carrey talk, you know. It's such a good talk. What he says is, I wish everybody could have everything that I have, because I have everything. I have all of the money I could want. I have a good family, I have a beautiful home, and I have lots of cars, and I have lots of people loving me, and all of this. It doesn't do it. But you have to get all of these things, maybe, to realize that it does not do it.
Yeah. That's the booby prize.
Yeah. And because it just came to me, for whatever reason, that Swamiji giving the talk, and he kind of laughed about it because somebody wanted him to give the talk. This was New Year's Eve. Swamiji, tell us what the purpose of life is. You know, it was like that. You know? Mm. So he must have thought, all right. And he did the whole talk. But he started at the talk because he decided to, okay, we'll do the talk on the purpose of life. It's New Year's Eve, you know, it's late at night. And so he just says, he starts like this, the purpose of life is to live it. And then he went on and unfolded the meaning of it, you know. But the thing is, it's a beautiful contemplation, because in the end, the what is purposeful is your own swarupa. I mean, the one from whom this entire infinite creation has come, the very source of the whole creation. It is the very life source of the whole thing. So it is causally the purpose in that sense. It's the purpose of everything. But where does the in terms of satyam mitya, where does the purposefulness, if you look at it instead of an accomplishment, look at it more as a feeling. Like if you say, I am feeling so happy, or I'm feeling so much love, or I'm feeling such a sense of purpose, or I'm feeling that life is so meaningful. What is the source of that? It's just on the ananda of yourself, and it's in the various forms of vrittis. But if you have, you know, the positive vrittis, you can have all of these ways of talking about the positive vrittis, but actually, it's a shanta vritti, you know, which is really just mirroring your own nature. And so then you can just go to yourself and your mind can ask that question, you know, in terms of recognizing your own being as being the meaningfulness or being the purposefulness. You know, what is filling that word with affect? That's the idea. What is filling the word love or compassion or care? All of these beautiful words that are joy or bliss. What is the source for these positive vrittis? And what is the source for the negative vrittis? It's a mind that has stress, and so is not able to have a shanta vritti. It's the absence of the shanta vritti. The greatest absence of the shanta vritti is what we call hell. You go take it as far as you can go, and there you've got it. It's hell, you know? The devil. Sorry, but...
When you say source of a negative vritti, isn't the source the source?
The source of the negative vritti, yeah. In the sense of if the vritti in its tension, you know, is itself not reflecting that. And that is me. And so then my mind is enjoying an absence, a darkness, in reference to my own being. That's why.
So the source is accessible even during the negative vritti?
It is. But so that, for Jnani, it is. Not for an Ajnani.
But you can have a stress or tension and know that it's stress and tension and still be aware of yourself, but drawn into the stress.
Yeah, but that yes, of course, and what we're learning, that's where we talk about things like commitment. And we have to, it's not like we can talk about it and talk about it, and still you have very little commitment. The commitment grows and matures. Because there comes a time when your mind is stressing out, instead of bouncing down the stairwell.
The web.
Yeah, and getting caught in the web. You know how to be with it in a way that is healing and brings it back to yourself. And that's what you want to do.
Yeah.
That's what you're trained to do. That's what you want to do. That's the thing. But sometimes, and for, I'd say, a long time, everybody has their own, you know, things that, their own commitments.
Mm-hmm.
And then knowledge doesn't count when these things come up. Yeah. And so like a bouncing ball, you find yourself in the pit. But then what I would say is, then you can at least have the commitment to, when you're down in the pit and the tension starts to release a little bit, then to be with that in a healing way.
Yeah.
But you can't even take that for granted. Of course I'm talking about myself. I mean, we're looking at years and years here of having the commit, your level of commitment become something that is in the present with what is happening, rather than having your mind have this issue and this issue and just taking you for a ride. And then you go with that ride, and then it works itself out finally, and then you can be back with your knowledge.
Well, did you nurture that commitment, or did it kind of all of a sudden appear, or did it, was it like what?
Well, with Shravanel, like we're just having this class right now. We're talking about commitment. We're bringing that to consciousness so that there's some sort of value in the mind there, right? That it's kind of like a, what do you call that? Auto-suggestion. So we know about this.
Yeah.
And Swamiji talked about it in so many different ways. His use of the word commitment came quite a bit later, but I really like it. Mm-hmm. You know, he's always talked about it, you know? But then the thing is, at what point in our shravana does what he's talking about become meaningful to me? And that takes its own time.
You seem to be talking about there was a shift from, well, even if you have self-knowledge, and you have, led down the primrose path by your own mind.
Yeah.
And then eventually you find, you know, you see that, you can go through that, and it can take an hour or a few hours or a day or whatever.
Yeah.
And eventually you come back to your knowledge. But at some point, your commitment grows to the point where you pretty much don't let yourself go down that primrose path.
That's right. Yeah. You don't want... It goes in stages.
Okay.
One of the later stages is, no, I'm not going to go there.
So there's a point of choice there.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. There becomes a point of choice where, no, I'm not going to go there. Because it's not in my best interests. What do I get out of it?
Right.
Nothing. And that becomes clear, and I don't want to go there.
What
and
causes
then,
that shift, though? Just that you just realize the whole thing is pointless, basically?
Yeah, but it's vairagya.
Okay.
Yeah. It's the more, I think, and even in the Shastra, it says, instead of think of which verses, I can't think of them right now, but I know that it's there in different places. To the degree... It's kind of circular.
Mm-hmm.
As your mind has ananda, the more vairagya it has.
Mm-hmm.
It's like that. Mm-hmm. It's not you don't grow in vairagya without growing in ananda.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then the ananda is kind of addictive. You know?
In a good way.
In a good way. It's like, no, I'm not going to deal with. I don't have to go there. I don't have to get upset about this. I don't have to need this. It really doesn't matter. You know, I'm not going to go there because I enjoy just being with myself. And then what happens is you just don't go there. But it's all kind of in stages. I think you have to think of vairagya in terms of ananda. For the mumukshu, vairagya starts out as a negative. It means there's a viveka that has taken place where I realize that everything is what we call anitya. Everything is time-bound. I don't know what isn't time-bound, but I know that everything that I experience is time-bound. I don't know the self, so I don't know that there is anything that's not time-bound, but this is all time-bound.
Mm-hmm.
Therefore, vairagya, none of this can make me happy. It can't. It can just give me some little experiences, but it's time-bound. Everything about me is time-bound. This ananda that I'm experiencing is going to, it's just a dukkha yoni, the Buddha says, it's a dukkha yoni. It's just a womb for dukkha.
Mm-hmm.
And then I see that really clearly. But as I mature in these qualities, like viveka, vairagya, and nishamadam, all those, the viveka, first I see all of this is anitya, it's all time bound. But as I gain knowledge, I recognize what is free from time, myself. So the viveka resolves, right, into clarity. This is this half is time, the samsara, the mitya, is time-bound, and I am timeless. The same thing with the vairagya, right? The vairagya starts at, none of this can make me happy. To the recognition, I am the ananda. No, this needs to make me happy. Yeah. And so vairagya becomes like, you know, the example we use for vairagya is like the helium balloons for an adult. The difference between the helium balloons for a little child and the helium balloons for an adult. The little child gets really upset. But for the adult, everything becomes like helium balloons. It's fine. I have fun with them when they're there, and when they're gone, that's fine.
Everything?
Everything. 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 Mm. And where it's not that way, it's your sadhana. So that's a big thing to think, because that means even in reference, and Shankara has a beautiful commentary. This is in, I think it's in the second chapter, near the second half of the second chapter, where there's a verse that says you need samatvam, means you need to be the same in joy and sorrow, mm-hmm. and in victory and defeat. And there's another one, mm-hmm. too. And in his commentary says, yes, you have to, that samatva buddhi, that means they with joy and defeat, all of these things, I'm just the same. It doesn't, I don't need either one of them, either one of these opposites. And then he says, and you also have to have the samatva buddhi, that's remaining the same, mm-hmm. in your failure to do this. Right. Yeah.
Yeah. So that, otherwise you get discouraged.
Because but also then you're taking, you know, the vairagya is not complete. It's vairagya toward everything out here, but of course my mind. I have no vairagya toward my mind. Whereas having some vairagya to your mind is what allows you to welcome it and to let it be and to be helpful. Just like you are with the world, like as you become more compassionate and your mind is settled down and less raga dvesha, you naturally become compassionate because that's your nature. Raga dvesha, my likes and dislikes, you're in the way of that, you know. And I want to change this and change that, change this person and change that person, and all of that goes away. Then it has to go away internally also. Because then I can become a compassionate, caring person toward the world and toward myself. It has to be both. Myself means my mind and body and little ones and such.
I see, you know, what makes a difference, the way you've been talking about it, is seeing the important role that Ananda does play in it, because the tendency is, if you, when you get caught up in something, at least my tendency would be to, you know, analyze it and try to analyze it always, saying, oh, this is baloney, you know, why am I getting all hung up about this, you know, but actually more effective in some ways is, I mean, you can also use that, see that it's not real. But more effective is to remember the Ananda. You just don't even go there in a certain way.
Yeah, I mean, because that's what I mean, that as the Ananda, the Shanti in your mind, right. and your own access to your own being increases, you really don't want to go there.
Right.
Because it's not worth it. It has no Ananda.
Right.
Yeah. You are the one and only source of Ananda. So you're only hurting yourself by engaging in the world in a way that just creates ashanti.
So you can tell yourself it's not worth it.
Yeah, definitely.
Okay.
Because it's not.
Yeah.
I can tell myself it's not worth it because it's not worth it. You can't tell yourself this isn't worth it. Oh, I think it is. You know, because my ananda is still out there. Well, if you believe that it's out there, then I think you just have to kind of be with your mind and do some inner child work, or write it out.
Yeah.
Because you know that it's not, but you get caught. There's still a lot of value. There are certain things that you're going to put more value on than other things. Some things are just easy, you know. But some things, you know, they're loaded issues for you. So there's no vairagya there. Right? It's a loaded issue, and it just takes your mind on a wild ride. And so then you have to have some compassion for that and slowly bring it back when you're able to. And it's like a tidal wave takes you out, and then you have to let it bring you back.
I was just going to say, it strikes me that really, from my point of view, Vedanta is the height of cognitive therapy.
Yeah. It's very cognitive therapy in terms of, it doesn't do much. It does very little in terms of like depth analysis of dealing with the unconscious things. They acknowledge it, but it's not.
What is, I don't know, cognitive therapy?
Well, it's where you recognize on a conscious level what the issues are, and that recognition solves the problem. But Vedanta is not strong on dealing with the unconscious, and so that's why we bring a lot of unconscious things in. Like Jung himself said, you know, before the advent of psychology, it didn't come about because it wasn't necessary. It's like the things...
I'm sorry, what did you say?
That's interesting.
Yeah, that before psychology came about, it wasn't... It didn't come about because it wasn't necessary.
Oh.
Because the... how he would say it is, you know, the kind of the archetypal structure of the psyche had a place to land.
Yeah.
It had a religion that it could believe in. Their parents weren't getting divorced. It was very kind of cut and dried, like all of the things that a human being had to go through, kind of developmentally, almost ritually, were there to take place. And so the unconscious had a world to land on, to hold it.
Yeah.
But as all of these things, including religion, started breaking down, you know, a lot through science, and then family structures breaking down, then the psyche had no place to land out here, and so it was just started churning inside, nowhere to go. That's, he talks about it like that, you know, it's really kind of moving.
Because
you can have a heavy-duty trauma, say, and that leads to depression. That heavy-duty trauma won't ever quite resolve itself. It'll always remain.
Well,
if you hold it differently,
The heavy-duty traumas and all of these things are usually kept secured in the unconscious.
Yeah.
Because there's no way to bring it out, right? There's no way to come into relationship with it. So parenting, if you have children, animals, that will help to some degree bring unconscious material out. It just does. But often it'll just stay sequestered in there, and then you lose a lot of emotional freedom because of that.
What do you mean by emotional freedom?
Well, because so much of you is feels endangered, that you have traumas inside that you can't afford to have triggered. You cannot go there. And so some situations, some people, some environments trigger that situation. And so you say, no. You just, your conscious mind doesn't even say no. The whole defense system says, no, we're not going there. And we're not even going to let you know that you're not going to go there. You know? So that's why psychology, in a lot of instances, in fact, what we're doing is enough. Sometimes it's not enough. Sometimes you actually need a psychologist there who knows what they're doing to kind of, kind of be the good person or the good parent or the safe other, you know, to be internalized into the unconscious. And that's all unconscious behavior also. Still, the conscious mind can't go, I'm going to internalize this therapist now. You know, I'm going to internalize this therapist as the good father. It can't happen on a conscious level. But in that therapeutic environment, it can happen. You know, it can happen with Swamiji. I mean, it certainly happened with me. And in hindsight, when I look at what I went through with Swamiji those first couple of years, he was just a great therapist. He didn't even know it. But my psyche used him in that way. You know? And I didn't know anything about psychology either. So for me, when I look back on some of the things, the way he held things, and it's just so beautiful, you know, and so many of these unconscious things or things that were held inside, how they all came out, all that therapeutic kind of work took place very naturally because of his strong objective presence, which is exactly what a therapist provides for you, is a strong, objective, benign, non-judgmental presence that's on your side. So when we do inner child work, that's what we provide for ourselves, a strong, objective, you know, gentle, benign person who's on my side. We call the inner friend.
Did Swamiji have to go through that same kind of process for himself when he was growing?
No, I don't think so. You know, in India still, when I went there in the 70s, there was still a lot of Dharma there. There was a lot of strong family structure. They were still contained, at least in the group that I very much contained within their religion. So they didn't have the, for the most part, and then you have a whole family system that's containing you. It's not just one mother and father who are being worked to death, trying to handle all these kids. And they have a religion also that can accommodate death in a much easier way than we can. Because of karma, prarabdha karma, which they all know in their own little way, reincarnation, you know, Bhagawan as not a punishing God, but somebody who will look after us.
And still, you know, it's like in South India, people, you know, they have a connection with nature and a lot of things that we have been ruptured in our culture.
Yeah, and
still,
even a connection, even a lot that's going quickly, but even a connection with the grass and the and the fields and the living beings and
the farm.
Yeah, it's real beautiful. We just went on a long little journey there.
What was Jivanmukta or something?
Jivanmukta. Living. Jivan means that the present participle means living. Mukta means liberated. Jivanmukta, living liberated. It means a liberated person. There's another thing, Videyamukta. And somebody who's liberated after death, there's still some stuff that has to be released and all of that. So, the Krama Mukti, it's called Krama. Krama means in a sequence.
What does that mean?
Krama means a sequence. They say there's Jivanmukta means in this life itself you finish everything off.
Okay.
In terms of your raga dvesha and the things that cause you to want to come back.
Mm.
It can be that those, whatever those, what they call pratibandhikas are, those obstructions are, can be released before you have to take another birth. Or just on different planes.
Can you know if
wait, you're saying after death they
yeah.
can be released?
After death and before the next birth.
Yeah, after death and before the next birth.
Okay.
To the Brahma Sutras. We don't spend a lot of time with that other than knowing that's a possibility.
So that's an exception to the idea that you have to be in Brahma Loka or in this Loka to have release, because this is
well,
kind of
it would be
between.
more in the sense that you already have knowledge.
Yeah.
But there's still some scars.
So it's kind of just a
fizzle.
Can you ask yourself? Is any reason I want to come back? Can you ask yourself now. I mean.
Yeah, go ahead. Ask
whatever
yourself.
You like or don't like is a reason.
Yeah, like if you ask, do I have some need? It's an interesting question. Do I want to be reborn? Do I have some reason to be reborn? And I wouldn't. Worry about that one way or the other, because you're so far in the end game now that if you have some karmas to exhaust, then you'll do what it takes to exhaust those karmas. It's already over.
So even if there's just a couple more lives.
By the way.
Yeah, it doesn't make any difference. But there's nothing wrong in it.
No.
We're done. You don't know how done you are.
Well, that's good to hear.
So, what's
party time.
Jivanmukta, and could a Jivanmukta still be going through emotional lag time?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Those are called, it's called pratibandhika jnanam, knowledge with pratibandhikas. You know, in a way you can't prove that, because in some ways it doesn't make any sense, but if you talk about it in terms of emotional lag time, if you have vairagya toward your mind, you can accommodate the things, you can take care of them just like you take care of other people. You know? If it's the type of thing that captures you and you lose your dhamma, then that'll be something that you're working on, but it still doesn't mean that you have to come back just to solve that issue.
Yeah. So that's not enough of that won't magnetize you to.
No.
Isn't it kind of like Swamiji? Saw the picture of his father, and then grief came up.
all kinds of grief.
But if he had never seen the picture of his father and the grief had not come up,
yeah.
it wouldn't have made him have another lifetime.
No, no. But probably as he was leaving, all those feelings would dissipate and they'd probably see all of them come up and out.
Mm.
Just like that happens in, at least initially, when you're starting to contemplate. So if you've gained this knowledge or some degree of it, to give more shanti to the mind than the mind is used to having. Okay. Then when you do meditation, sometimes all kinds of torrents of thoughts will come out and feelings, you know. That's because your mind or your body's releasing them.
Mm-hmm.
And well, so they're called kashayas. You just relax and let those things come out.
Swamiji was grateful to have that.
He was very grateful, yeah. Very grateful to be able to have remembrance of his father and so many emotions and things. He thought it was very beautiful. He wasn't afraid of it at all.
Mm-hmm.
And he didn't think, I shouldn't tell anybody about
this. No.
he talked so freely about everything. It's really wonderful, you know. Okay, so. Om Swastipajavya Paripalayantam Nyayena Margena Mahim Mahishaha Ko Brahmane Pyashivamastu Nityam Lokasamasta Sukhino Pavantu Kale Varushati Parujanyaha Prithivi Sasya Shalini Desho Yamsho Barahitaha Brahmana Santu Nirbhayaha Om Sarve Bhavantu Sukhinaha Sarve Santu Niramayaha Sarve Bhadrani Pashyantu Ma Kaschit Dukha Bhag Bhavet Asato Ma Sadgamaya Tamaso Ma Jyotirgamaya Mrityorma Amitangamaya Om Purnamadav Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vashishyate Om Shanti 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 Hari Om Shri Gurubhyo Namaha Hari Om.